This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:37 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. And our next story is focused on hate speech in our country and essentially whether we are sending out the right message about how we actually feel about it. So during his keynote speech at the ASEAN Digital Ministers meeting today, Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has said that ASEAN should consider taking a tougher stance against hate speech. This includes harassment, those based on harassment based on gender or sexual orientation. And this is, I think, interesting timing considering we have recently heard, I would say differing opinions, I think, from within his own allies and administration.
So PM Muhyiddin suggested that legislation could actually be considered within ASEAN as a whole to compel digital platforms to take, I suppose, specific action against hate speech. Just to quote from him directly, he mentioned specifically speech willfully promoting violence and attacks, be it verbal or physical, including but not limited to harassment and threats against a person or persons based on their race, gender, religion, sexual orientation, disability or nationality.
So currently, Malaysia doesn't have specific hate speech laws, although we do have some against inciting disharmony, disunity and enmity on the grounds of race or religion. And the Pakatan Harapan government previously had proposed a National Reconciliation and Harmony Bill, which would have covered some aspects of this, but it didn't move forward.
Yeah, so the thing is, as you mentioned, Lynn, this particular speech, while espousing some very important issues and definitely the fact that the online space has become the space where so much of hate speech proliferates quite freely, this speech came at an interesting time because just a couple of days ago, the deputy minister in the Prime Minister's Department, Religious Affairs, Ahmad Mazuk Shari, brought up the, suggestion that the Act 355 under Sharia law be amended to provide for heavier punishments for LGBT people. Now, this is something that caused a lot of backlash from a lot of critics, including human rights groups like Suhakam. What makes this interesting, I suppose, is that Ahmad Marzuk is a PAS MP, and PAS is a key ally to the Prime Minister's own Perikatan National Government. So some mixed messaging going on there.
Yes, and also I find that what we say on an international stage and a national stage should match up. Because when you read the speech, right, when you hear the speech, when you read the speech that the Prime Minister gave, it sounds great. You know, you want to be a part of that. You want to believe that we are a country that believes in those things, that we don't want people to be harassed or discriminated against, particularly online, particularly for all these things, including sexual orientation. And so you hear that and you think, yes, this is absolutely sending out the kind of message that I'm proud to be associated with. And then on a smaller scale, or rather within our own country, you have this happening. And I think it's important to just point out the disconnect that appears to be going on and suggest that we take a look at that and we understand where it's coming from and how it impacts the ways we move forward.
So how it impacts is actually a great way to put it, because while on the surface it may seem like calling for this law to be strengthened isn't necessarily contradicting what the Prime Minister said, it cannot be denied that a lot of people take their cues from these things, right? And often saying particular groups of people need to be policed in a particular way does encourage then people to assume that it's okay to speak in certain ways about them. So that's where I think the disconnect starts appearing.
Yes. Also, if we look at what the deputy minister said, one element of it was that the reason why the act needed to be amended is because right now it doesn't appear to have enough of an effect. So I think just, where are we? You know, where are we with this? Where do we actually stand on this? let us know what you think. We're talking today about a suggestion, a call from Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin at the ASEAN Digital Ministers meeting for ASEAN to take a tougher stance against hate speech, including those that are based on gender or sexual orientation. And this is coming hot on the heels of a deputy minister suggesting that Act 355 under Sharia law be amended to provide for heavier punishments for LGBT people. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we are going to be speaking with human rights lawyer Andrew Koo. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:43. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about hate speech in our country, particularly on the basis of gender and sexual orientation, and whether or not our country's leaders may be sending out perhaps some mixed messages on this front, and how this impacts the way we think about and formulate policies around this in future. So if you'd like to weigh in, how do you feel about this? Do you think that there are mixed messages? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So on the line with us now, human rights lawyer Andrew Koo. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on your program.
So let's look at the Prime Minister's suggestion first of all. How broad is Malaysia's current protection against hate speech?
Well, there will be some people who say that it's actually overly broad in the sense that there are provisions in the law that allow complaints to be made or police reports to be made for very, very minor issues or even very comments that simply just annoy someone rather than go very much into hate speech. So I think that there will be people who argue that while we do have laws regulating hate speech, the trigger for it seems sometimes to be so flimsy that it could actually be used to intimidate other people.
Andrew, let's get into what this actually boils down to, right? What does the Constitution say about equal rights?
I think the issue that is of relevance to us is about equality before the law and equal protection of the law. So if you're looking at specifically issues of hate speech, then it's basically hate speech that's directed it to any person or any community that could be actionable.
I think it's worth also pointing out that the Constitution is a document that predates the internet, it predates social media. Do you think that it requires amendments for it to match up to modern concerns and platforms, or is the essence of it sufficient to cover what we're facing in this day and age?
Well, I think, thank you for suggesting that. I think the essence of it is sufficient. The question is, how do you implement it given the evolving and changing technological environment? So here we have a little bit of a challenge because there are those that will argue, for example, that technological intermediaries, so people who just perhaps provide you with the telecommunications line or the social media platform should actually have no responsibility for what is actually published on that. So that, for example, if I'm a telco, I just provide you the means to talk to someone. But if you say certain things in that conversation, should I, as the telco, be held responsible? So likewise, if you have an internet facility, if you have a social media platform, the challenge is what is the legal or criminal liability of the provider of the service if someone uses that service to say, incite hate against a particular community? I think that's where the challenge is at the moment.
So when it comes to this question of hate speech, what would tougher enforcement in cyberspace look like?
Well, tougher enforcement to me, in my humble opinion, would mean equality of investigation. I think most people, when they look at the situation in Malaysia, will say that the law is, how shall you put it politely, asymmetrically applied. That there is a a preponderance of investigations or reports when it affects certain communities, but not if the incitement or the tendency to hate speech emanates from certain communities. So it's always you're looking at the potential victim community, but sometimes it seems to be the case that it's only one particular community feeling offended that is actioned by the law enforcement authorities. So to the other comments that are made to other communities, especially minority communities, are ignored.
Let's hone in on why we're talking about this, right? Because there have been two contradicting statements recently made by our leadership. So on the international front, we have Prime Minister Muhyiddin saying that, ASEAN as a whole needs to take a tougher stance on this issue. And then back home, there is a push by a minister within the Prime Minister's department, in fact, to have further punishments for the LGBT community under Sharia law. Help us understand this, and also what statement would have more impact on local laws and sentiment?
Well, I don't think your listeners should be very surprised. This is not a new thing in Malaysia, where we go to the international community and say one thing and do something totally different in our backyard. We have been mentioned as a moderate country at the UN, but then when we come home, we take legal action, or we commence investigations against what seems to be a very innocuous statements, simply because somebody who's a very thin-skinned person has decided that he's offended by a comment. So this this disconnect between what we tell the world internationally and what actually happens in Malaysia, it's not new. So this is just yet another example, another chapter in which, on the one hand, the Prime Minister makes a speech at an international event and talks about the need for greater laws, things like that, and then when to prevent hate speech, and then you get ministers or deputy ministers in his cabinet that basically say, we have to actually enforce the law against communities who live or who practice certain things that are not mainstream and are perhaps not acceptable by some segments of that mainstream community.
So, Andrew, you rightly point out that this is not new to Malaysian discourse, to Malaysia's public statements. Is there any motion happening in the area of trying to reconcile this disparity that we're talking about?
Well, I think one of the ways to reconcile, as you say, this disparity is to continue to speak up against the injustice and this kind of discrimination where hate speech laws are only applied in favor of one community and not in favor of others. That's one thing. And the other thing is for lawyers and social activists and human rights defenders to continue to speak truth to power and to hold our government and our law enforcement agencies to account and to challenge them on why is it that they seem to be, uneven in their implementation and application of the law.
Now, the Prime Minister was making this speech in an ASEAN platform, and he was basically making a call for ASEAN to come together and do this. Now, is there anyone that we can look to within ASEAN that deals well with hate speech?
Well, I think you have to actually look at the report of the event. In preparation for this interview, I actually looked at a couple of other reports. And one of the things that the Prime Minister was saying, to be fair to him, was the threat of transboundary, transnational cyber attacks. So basically, an attack on, let's say, country A emanating from country B within the region. And what he was calling for to at one level was greater laws that would regulate transboundary cybercrime or transboundary hate speech. And of course, we can definitely understand some of the context of that. You think of the Rohingya community. Are they demonized? Where is that demonization coming from? It may not be from their own country, maybe from another part of the region. So it's that kind of laws. And the question is whether or not national laws within the ASEAN region are sufficient to cover what we call transboundary. So in other words, it's emanating from another country. Normally, criminal laws are very nation-bound. So it mainly looks at offences that occur within the geographical boundary of a country emanating from that. But here, because of technology, we are looking at transboundary. But, that's not, again, unique because, we also have to look at issues like transboundary pollution, that's not in the haze for that matter. We need to look at laws that grant to a certain extent extraterritorial effect so that if indeed there is cybercrime or there is hate speech that's emanating from outside the borders, it should still be open for countries to be able, if they are able to prosecute somebody from another country who is making those very negative comments. But of course, you do need to be careful because, you don't want to give countries a license to go just after anybody they feel like, So it has to be set within proper limits and proper checks and balances.
So, Andrew, in closing, I mean, we've been focused on the law, but that's one part of it. Are there other aspects, broadly speaking, that you think as a society we need to properly address this issue of hate speech?
Well, I think, what I've been alluding to is the fact that I think we should be able to have a system, this is the equal protection of the law, where minority communities who feel that they are being attacked have the ability, in a very real and practical sense, to complain about that and to have some assurance that their complaints will be acted upon. I mean, there's no point, and I think this is perhaps the weakness in our legal system, there's no point saying that there are laws to cover hate speech. But then when a particular affected community goes to the authorities and says, look, I want to make a report, what then happens is the authorities investigate that particular community itself rather than the people who are allegedly allegedly making those negative statements. So, there has to be not just the provision of the law, but there has to be that sense of safety that you can safely lodge complaints about hate speech directed at you or members of your community coming from, let's say, a majority community of a particular country and not feel that the law enforcement authorities are actually going to defend the majority community and investigate you instead. I think that's the worry at the moment. So you have to not just grant access to justice, but that access has to be real. And you have to have confidence in the fairness and impartiality of the people who enforce the law.
Andrew, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening.
You're most welcome.
That was human rights lawyer Andrew Koo taking us through, I guess, the contrasting statements and the contrasting stances that we appear to be seeing from the Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, who on the one hand says that ASEAN as a whole needs to take a tougher stance against hate speech, including harassment that is based on gender or sexual orientation. And then you have a deputy minister within the Prime Minister's department saying that an act needs to be amended to provide for heavier punishments for LGBT people. people, it really doesn't take a top detective to see that there is a disparity here. And yes, we've been asking for your thoughts.
So Sue says, not only are we a nation that has lost its soul due to its endemic corruption and is in danger of heading towards being a failed state, the conflicting statements tells you we Malaysians and Malaysia have morphed into a state of schism. We are like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde horror story. Where's our dignity as a country in the eyes of the international community? We say one thing to the world and do another to our own citizens.
What I found, Sue, you know, most distressing in some ways is Andrew rightly pointing out earlier that this is not new. And when the minute Andrew said it, it kind of clicked. I was like, you're absolutely right. It is not new. I mean, even in the time that we've been doing the show, we've been seeing it happen over and over again. We talk about it all the time. And yet somehow there is still this sense of disappointment. I don't even know how to address that point about schism, because it's true, right? And it's not as if, again, it's very difficult for anybody who does even the slightest bit of research into our country and the state of affairs. It's not as if anybody wouldn't be able to locate that point of disparity.
And sometimes I think it is actually just a question of answering who is accountable when they make these statements, because often we see statements being made that may not really pan out to be anything, but those statements carry weight because they are made by people in power. And yet you don't know who authorizes them, where the buck stops. And therefore, there is this just, the schism is such a great word, because there's a sense of confusion. And often for communities that are vulnerable, the confusion leads to fear.
So let us know your thoughts. I mean, are we sending out clear enough messages on how we actually feel about hate speech and discrimination and harassment? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.